anything about it, so that you get put aside and you got a warrant on for your arrest. Little things like this, that's just small things. There's other things, many, many other things that have to be considered in my life today that I won't even pay the attention to. And the next thing you know, I've got a day that's unmanageable. And the only reason it's unmanageable, it came to the surface and it was neglected, it was put aside, and it became something major now, and somebody got affected, whether it was me, my family, or somebody did. And then I have to pay attention to it. I have to hurry up. I have to make more money to pay it off. I have to do something. Something's wrong with the picture, but the picture was there a long time ago, and I didn't pay any attention to it. This is all about being sober, in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is all about an unmanageable life. This is all about having a life today because of the program of recovery, so I don't have to go to hell again, so I don't have to be punished and have guilt trips and everything else in me. This is a repetition thing again, what I'm talking. Maybe it sounds like it to you, but it doesn't to me. And it's always there for me to look at, to have, to do, and to be, only because it's my life. It's important to me. Three, four, we get to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Now we're... Do you want to ask anything on that, or talk about that for a minute or two? Just for...
How about guilt, Bob? How do you deal with guilt in your life for falling short on shortcomings or not entirely ready to give over shortcomings and living without
Most of the... When I'm learning, or when I'm with... the steps and being taught steps or being around steps and considering my life and all that, is that there's none of us walk on water. There's none of us that can be 100% right or perfect or anything else like that. But if the effort is being given out, if it's being considered, that if and when it does happen, the guilt or any of these others that come in the picture, they can be eliminated again. You don't have to live with it. You don't have to suffer from it. But you don't have to repeat it again, or whatever it is, to do it again. And the willingness that's needed there. If I'm doing something and I'm getting bad results from it, and then I learn that there's a way to do it so I have good results, and every so often maybe I miss the mark and I get bad results again, and then I go back to God and I tell God, all I do is I say, God, I'm sorry, I'm up my old tricks, I did it again, would you forgive me again and help me here? So that means it gets less and less. The whatever it was that caused the guilt or whatever it was that brought this trouble. If I recognize this and if I identify it, if I go to God with it, and if I have to go to God 10 times with it, maybe it comes back 10 times. It does come back. So if it does, maybe 10 times. But each time it gets less, it gets longer. And each time I'm going to the source of supply that I need to go to instead of self. And so this means that the program of recovery is still there and I'm still living it. And this here eventually will fade away. Now, to look for perfection or look for things to say, because I pray to God and because I went through the steps, I should never be affected again by this. It's never a wasn't. It's never gone. It's always there. So I can make mistakes today, and I don't have to suffer from them. I don't have to go down to the sewer again, live there some time or anything else like that. It's up to you like it's up to me. It's just exactly what it is that you want. Do you want to have a life that's full? Do you want to have a life that's good as it can be for you and the day you're in? Then you go for it again. You go harder. You go a little more. You stop doing certain things. You don't pay that price no more. This has all been exposed to you. It's been shown to you. It's offered to you. It's needed if you say it's needed. But you're the one that has to do it. Because you and I both know that we can keep going the way we want to go when we draw from that or get satisfaction out of that. And this is all we're looking for. We have to pay a price. But I don't think I want to pay that price no more. I learned a long time ago that the things that make me feel guilt, that disturb me, we're coming into that step, the next step. And step 10 is where that's all at, is what you're talking about now. Yeah?
Can you repeat your definition of the differences between
shortcomings and defects? The easiest way for me was the way it was presented to me, so that it gave me something to consider, is that defects of character was always things I was doing I should not do. Now, you have to stop and think about this now. Is What are the things I do I shouldn't do? See? Stop and think now what that means. Now, if you use, like yourself, if you, your own, say your own track record or your own inventory list, say that. What's on there as a defect that you put on there from your own head? Was there anything in there that you put down there that should, that you should not do, or you should do it? Which is it? See? Like I was full of anger and hostility and jealousy and envy, and I was suspicious. There's so many that you can put down. But you see, I can't use any of them things as a way of life because they cause trouble. They do something. They do harm. Now, they might not do harm to you, but they do harm to me. Because it gives me a life that's an unmanageable life. It causes my life problems. Real problems. Serious problems, see? It breaks relationships up. I get fired because of it. You just start naming all kinds of things that happen because of defects of character. If you use defects of character, believe me, there are things that you're doing you shouldn't do. And the opposite of that, of course, is in the shortcomings, the definition of a shortcoming. Well, the shortcomings explained to me is that I fall short of the mark. I don't complete something I should complete. I don't do something I should do. And that's why they're called shortcomings. The wording of step 7 threw me for a loss for a long time, like it threw others, because I was told when I got here that defects of character and shortcomings were the same thing. And they're totally opposite, absolutely opposite. That's what I, in the beginning, I was told that for a long time. See, and I heard that, I don't know how many of you, have you heard that too, maybe? Sure, I heard that. How many other guys, have you heard that too, Nay? The shortcomings and defects are the same thing? Man, that's so far wrong, it can't be. It's impossible. The word says differently. There's no 7 in the book, it's only a prayer. But the idea behind this is that this here book here, I don't know if you ever read the front part of this book, the 12 by 12, I heard so many arguments against it from different ones, and it isn't a question of them being right or wrong, it's just the idea that this is going to supply something that I need for my life. It says here that nevertheless the Infant Society determined to set down its experience in a book which finally reached the public in April of 1939. At this time, the recoveries numbered about 100. The book was called Alcoholics Anonymous, and from it, fellowship took its name. In it, alcoholism was described from the alcoholic's point of view. The spiritual ideas of the society were codified for the first time in the 12 steps, and the application of these steps to the alcoholic's dilemma was made clear. The remainder of the book was devoted to 30 stories of case histories in which the alcoholics described their drinking experiences and recovery. This established identification with the alcoholic reader and proved to them that the virtually impossible had now become possible. The book Alcoholics Anonymous became the basic text of the fellowship, and it still is. This present volume, meaning this book, proposes to broaden and deepen the understanding of the 12 steps as first written in the earlier work. Man, I can accept that 100%. Because I could not find step 1, step 2, 3 was a prayer, 7's a prayer, in the big book. They're in there, but they're only in there in numbered forms. They're not in there in an application. I have to read out of print whatever they put there to figure out what it means. This book says do this. Yeah? Cool.
And then sometimes maybe it's a related question to Rick, but sometimes I go throughout the course of the day, and I'm living okay. It doesn't mean I'm harming people. I'm living okay. But throughout the course of the day, the acknowledgement of God in my life happens a couple times. And at the end of the day, maybe I'm at a meeting, and I need to get called upon to share. It doesn't mean you're out pushing and shoving anything like that, but there's no thought of God in your life throughout the day. I find later that kills me more than that really kills me. It doesn't mean I'm hurting people, but there's not an acknowledgement of God. You know, how do you get it?
I never had a God in my life before AA. So when I'm in AA, I learned from other alcoholics. This one man, I started to learn what step 2 and 3 is about. And this man talked to me and told me about his God he had in his life. And so he said, why don't you try this God? Whatever you got doesn't seem to be working. So he told me what he called him. He called him God, and he got on his knees, and he got in the bedroom, and he did this and did that and everything else. And so what I did, I followed exactly what he said, and that was a beginning for me. I only did it at work, and I kept it alive by my watch. The way I first started, I'm not telling you to do this now. This ain't no recommendation. This is what happened to me, is that I'm a mechanic. I work for a dealership, you know, and you work 50-50. I get 50, they get 50. And so I flag tickets, you know, hard copies of your car, say, you know, and I do work, and I flag these, and they go by a time, see, you know, the time clock. So every time I associated my watch or the time clock, I always associated that to God. And so I would talk to God when I rang the clock or thought the clock or looked at the clock and everything else like that. So it kept the idea that God wasn't left out of my life like you're describing, see. But I only used it for one reason, and that was for anger and hostility at work. But it kept it alive. I started going through a day in about half an hour. I wouldn't think of God. Here's the clock again. I think I better talk to God. So I started relating a relationship with God through a clock, through ringing it, looking at it, and talking, you know, everything about the clock. The next thing you know, this is when they started asking me. They wanted to know if I was going to church. And the only thing I was doing was talking to God about my anger and hostility. I wasn't doing anything else, nothing. And this here started a relationship that I was only for a reason at work. Later on, and that was only a hit-and-miss deal anyway, and then later on, I found out that I could, this disease I have makes me talk to me. I'm a self-talker, and I knew this a long time ago, that I keep a conversation going all the time. It just don't stop. It just won't stop. I don't know if yours does, mine don't. And so I became aware of what I was doing. Even though I couldn't do much about it, I could do something, though. And so what I did, I started talking to God, because I found out that as I live my life, I talk anyway. I talk to me all the time. Why can't I talk to something other than me? And I can, but I don't know how to do that. So what I do is I start talking to God like He's sitting next to me physically there, like I would just talk to a person sitting there. I would relate my life to Him as I live my life. What should I do here? What should I do there? Look what they're doing out here now. Would you help me here? Would you be with me? And I do this today. Believe me, I do it all the time. I really do this, and I mean this now. Because I have to do this. Because this is where the dependency comes from. Because if I don't do this, then I walk alone. It's just like you said, you find yourself going from room to room, job to job, place to place, car to car, whatever it is. And God isn't there because God isn't needed, but He is needed there. For me, He's needed there. Because I can't go anywhere without the dependency. Dependency means that dependency is to be with God all the time. Anything I'm doing, I don't care what it is. But see how I do that? I talk to God. I ask God, would you help me here? Would you strengthen me here? Can I do your words? Can I say your words? Would you, according to your will, Lord, is it possible? Is it possible I can have this? Can I do this? Should I do this? It's a conversation. Because this is what they're telling me in step 11. Step 11 is where the only step where I can go spiritually in my life and grow. Grow spiritually. Not go, just grow. Because I have to do this. Because it's the disease of alcoholism, and when it says in there, what it says in the book at 11, we'll talk about it, is that this here is important for me. My life, see, when I say my life's important to me, I'm not telling you that I'm worrying about my car, my possessions, my girlfriends, my wife, and kids, and all. I'm not telling you none of that stuff. I'm telling you about the inner man. I'm telling you about the way my life is, the motives behind my mind function, the gratitude we were just talking about a minute ago. This is what I'm talking about now. Same thing, see? How can I have gratitude in my heart if I don't have the life to have there for me to show you, to display to you? Not you personally, but to the world. See? So I can walk wherever I walk, and I'm totally free. Free of the old me, the old life. The brain that just goes nuts all the time. This is important. I don't know how you're going to build it. I don't even know how to tell you. I can tell you what I did. But I know that God is necessary. The power, look at it if you want, start from the power. I don't care how you do it. It's necessary to have something other than what I have. And what do I have is me. I have to admit that and accept that. I have to look at me now. Look internally to me all the time. I'm the one that belongs here because I'm the one that gets upset. I'm the one that don't like that world out there. I'm the one that needs help. I don't look at out there and see you guys out there like that. I see me like that.
There's something you say, would you say to yourself, it's been 5 hours, I haven't thought about you, would you say something
to that? Yes, I go to God is I do something else, but I do exactly what you're saying there. I go to God, and I tell God exactly where I'm at. I'm sorry, God. I've left you. I've been away from you. I name the time even. I discuss it with him. I tell him I feel bad about it. Would you help me? Would you forgive me? Would you be with me? Would you guide and direct me? Would you strengthen me again? See, the thing there is what I'm doing is I'm doing what step two taught me to do. Step two says that I came to believe in a power greater than me that will restore me to sanity, and that's exactly how I'm doing. I'm still doing the same thing. In 2 to 3 to 11, see, is necessary. Listen, my skin used to crawl, my blood would boil, and I couldn't say the word God. I couldn't talk to you and tell you from my heart exactly what was going on in my mind and the way I talk and act and am, because I thought that made me less a man. I thought that anybody that talks the way I hear you guys talk, it makes you a Jesus freak. There's something the matter with you. Because I thought all of this made you less a man. This is me coming from a life that I lived in a world that was a tough world, a world that they didn't talk about God. There was no church, there was no God, no prayers, nobody I ever ran with and rode bikes with. They didn't talk about God. They wouldn't let you talk about God. When I got here, it was all brand new. And it was not only new, it was something I didn't want to do. It's something wrong with it. I just wouldn't do it. 2.5 years, I wouldn't even say the Lord's Prayer. Even over Reseda, they'd say, Anderson, at the end of the meeting, would you lead us in the Lord's Prayer? We'd still be standing over there right now if you waited for me to say it. No way, man. No way. See, I'm not that person. I never was that person I thought I was, but I didn't know who else to be, and I had to be that same guy all the time. I don't want to do these things. Something inside of me says, no, don't do that. It's not right. You shouldn't have to do that. And I believe there's a lot of alkies around like me, and some have a God, some had a God when they were a kid, too. And they still do the same thing that I did. They deny God. They won't let God in their life. It's very obvious that when you're failing and you have days where you keep going down the sewer all the time, you keep hurting people that love you and care for you, you've got to know there's something wrong inside of you. You've got to know that this here is something that you yourself can't stop. You can't make it right. When they talk about lack of power, that's exactly what they're describing. They're not describing the kind of power I used to think they were talking about. I thought they were talking about physical power and mental power and things like that. I didn't know what power meant one time. I was afraid to try it. I was afraid to look at it even. I was afraid to listen to somebody else speak of God, say the word even. This has got to be the same for all of it, because it's the same words. It's the same message with the same steps. It starts out with the same power even. A power greater than any of us. That probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism. God could and would if he were sought. See, I don't put this stuff together. It used to be that way. I do today, of course. But not a long time ago. I didn't know that this here is a way of life. This all relative. Everything hooks together. Everything is part of everything. Because it's God's world. It's not Alcoholics Anonymous world. It's not my world. This is all about the same thing all the time. That each and every one of us, on page 17, it says in there that what we have a common solution. We have a way out upon which we can agree with brotherly and harmonious action. They're talking about God, the necessary needed power of God. That's what this is all. It ain't meetings. It ain't, sure, that's part of it. But see, the solution, it says exactly what's needed. Long time. Step 10. Continue to take personal inventory. I personally... Inventory. Huh? You want to break? Yeah, that's right, too. Yeah, I meant to say that. Yeah, you're right. I get lost in this stuff. Honestly, I do. Time don't mean nothing to me. Man, I go for days and days and don't mean a thing to me. I don't need to rest. I don't plan nothing. I don't prepare nothing. I still bank and depend on God to supply everything that's necessary. Man, I gotta live like that. It's the only way I can live. We'll go on with step 10 and continue to take personal inventory. When I'm wrong, promptly admit it, is that step 10, it says in there that all inventories are like, I had a sponsor that talked to me about step 10. And here's the way he put it to me in step 10. He said that step 10 is for me in the life I live, in the day I'm in, so that if I acquire new defects of character, not just old defects of character, I knew I had old defects of character, but he said if I do acquire new defects of character, they also will be in there. So that step 6 is where I'm entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character, these wrongs that I know. The step 10 says that the day I live in, if there's an old defect of character or a new defect of character, an inventory is still needed. So an inventory would mean that this is the day I'm in, that I'm going to have to start. Now, this is your business of discipline and of self, looking at self, recognizing self, identifying self. It's very clear that they're talking about an inventory that I'm going to do in the day I'm in. Now, this inventory doesn't necessarily be like I thought it had to be or wanted me to be. Is that in the day I'm in, that we were talking before about a defect of character, if it pops up, but say I do something or something appears, there is something I can do about it, whether it's a new defect of character or an old defect of character. What it means is that I can admit, I can look at, I can see this, and I don't have to live with it until it kills me, or I have to wait till I get home, or next time I talk to God, maybe I can include that too, or something like that. So, this inventory, the major thing I think is on page 90, and it's about that spiritual axiom, because that's something that I wouldn't buy. I just wouldn't accept this, you know, is that it says in there that it's a spiritual axiom that whenever something disturbs me, no matter what it is, I'm at fault. And so this here is something I wouldn't buy and couldn't buy for a long time, because if the way I thought I was sober and I thought I was doing everything, you know, the best I could do it, and no matter what it was, I couldn't look at it as it's wrong, it's something wrong with me. Because a lot of times, a lot of people in there in my life or the life I live, somebody does something too many times. Maybe they do it 10 times and I can take it 9 times, the 10th time I blow my mind. See, in the spiritual axiom it says it doesn't make no difference what they do. If it bothers me, there's something wrong with me. And that's a hard nut to swallow, because what that means is that each and every day, no matter what goes down that day, there's no way I can have justifiable anger. I can't run out of patience, tolerance, that I must again do the same thing again. I have to keep calling on this God. I have to accept whatever's going down. And so I don't want to do that, because I don't understand it. To continue to take personal inventory and promptly admit it, I had to find out is that I have to, the minute that something goes down in the day I'm in, say like now, is that promptly admit it means that I go to God with it, so that I don't have to live the rest of my day out, or my life out, or my day out, being hurt by something I did or you did. It doesn't make no difference. So that I can have something now, so that as I go along in the day I'm in, I can make mistakes, but I still can go along. I still can have a happy, joyous, free life. I still can go ahead, because what I'm doing now is that I'm recognizing something, and I'm going to God with it, because this is what promptly admit it means to me. See, because I found out before, if I promptly admit something to me, I don't do anything about it. I try to cover it up. I try to rationalize it, excuse it. I try to get away from it or not pay any attention to it, whatever it is. And it doesn't do me any good to promptly admit it to you, whoever you are. Because it could be anybody. It doesn't make any difference to me. It doesn't affect me. But when I have a relationship with God, is where I'm in step 10 now, is that this here now is something that I have to pay attention to it, because down in 6, when I said I was entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, in 10 up there says, I'm going to promptly admit it. So it must mean that I promptly have to acknowledge my life to God when I go wrong or right. It doesn't make any difference. But right now we're talking about something that's a spiritual axiom. There's something inside of me that's wrong. I'm always looking inwardly now. I'm not looking outwardly. No way. Even if I see something that I think you're at fault, I still can't take it that way. This here is the spiritual axiom. I didn't know what an axiom is. I don't know what spiritual means, and I don't know what the heck they're doing here. Because it says in there that, isn't there such a thing as justifiable anger? that somebody, when they cheat us or they take us too far down the stick, can't we be properly armed so that we can defend ourselves, or we can say, you know, that you shouldn't do that? And it says, no, you can't do that. And I don't get the principle involved there about my life at all, because it doesn't make any difference to me. I can look at any situation at any time, and I can put the blame out there any place at all, any time I want to. I can always look outwardly and accuse, or look at that as that's what's wrong with the picture. There's nothing wrong with this picture here. And step 10, some of your, I guess, I don't know how your books are. Some of these books here, when they say pages like this, I got some old, and they're on the wrong page when I say that. It's not because I got two sets of books, you know. So if you're, I don't know what book you're looking at. It talks in here, it says, what about justifiable anger? If somebody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folks? For us, these are dangerous exceptions. We found that justifiable anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. It says, a spot check inventory taken in the midst of such disservices can be a very great help in quieting stormy emotions. Today's spot check finds its cheap application to situations which arise in each day's march. The consideration of long-standing difficulties had better be postponed when possible to times deliberately set aside for that purpose. The quick inventory is aimed at our daily ups and downs, especially those where people or new events throw us off balance and tempt us to make mistakes. That was what my sponsor was telling me and trying to show me, that there is such a thing as you live your life of getting too full of something, and then all of a sudden the thing gets out of hand and you start getting worried. I used to be like this all the time. I'd get real anxious and real concerned about something so great that I couldn't see straight and couldn't think straight. And this was very, you know, to me it was very obvious that I had to slow down. I had to learn how to do something different now, because I couldn't stop what was happening. And the way it hit me was the fact that, I worked on a fleet of trucks, you know, and these trucks, they got drivers that don't give a darn, see, so they're causing trouble, and the trucks quit running out on the freeways and different places and all that, just from maybe dumb things, you know, not checking water or oil or some dumb thing, you know. And I'd go there, and I'd be rushing and here and there, get them on the road, pressure's on you, and, you know, when the cars or trucks are going by you 90 miles an hour on the freeway, and you're going to get knocked off any minute and all that. And so this here mind that I was using would right away would go try to look at this thing, you know, and I can't see nothing but trouble. I can't see nothing but things that are getting worse, you know, as the day goes in. And so here I am, I'm getting anxious, and I'm starting to pick up on defects of character that are no defects of character. These aren't defects of character I had on my list even. But I didn't know how to recognize them or didn't know how to identify them. So this means here that the spiritual axiom, that whenever something disturbs me, man, it was very evident I was disturbed, you know, because I was really getting nuts in my brain about a situation that's there, and that's my job too, by the way. And I'm starting to get real anxious about it and everything else like that. I don't know how to stop the damn thing, see? And so all I have to do now is this here is where I, this is where I learn what's in the next steps in the prayer and meditation, see? Is that I there's something going on, and it's all inside of me. It's not out there. Because I get the same way whether I'm off the freeway or I'm down on the street down there, and I got them off the freeway, I'm still got the same kind of thoughts going in my mind, and I'm still really disturbed about it. And these are actual defects of character that are causing me harm. I'm thinking thoughts, and I'm doing things that I shouldn't do. Because this here is I'm shooting ahead, I'm worrying about getting home now, I'll have to work late, I'm worrying now about the boss in the truck, he wants the truck back on the road, and maybe I can't get it back on the road, and all that. And I'm starting to run under this here pressure that they're talking about here in a spot check inventory. It says that they're all like in principle. And all I have to do now on this here is I have to just give up, just quit. And that means exactly that too. That means that I don't give a damn if the truck ever runs. I just ain't going to think about it. And that's only to get away from self, because I'm so wrapped up in a power that's me, and I'm starting to do things the same way I did before, way down in 4 and 5 and 6, is that these here defects of character are controlling me. I'm living by them. But these are things there that seem to be, they seem to be there because they are there. And I don't know, they're new because they're not always there. They're not a way of life. They grab me and they hang on to me for a while, and then when I get rid of them, I'm okay again. And there isn't anything, there's nothing lasting even. And so the step 10, we were talking before about how my mind will carry thoughts and how it entertains or keeps things going, your resentments and guilt and memory of your performance and using known things, being able to use a mind that's still gonna kill me, it's gonna control me and kill me, and I don't know what to do about it. So it says in here, a few people have been more victimized by resentments than we alcoholics. It mattered little whether our resentments were justified or not. A burst of temper could spoil a day, and a well-nursed grudge could make us miserably ineffective. Nor were we ever skillful in separating justified from unjustified anger. As we saw it, our wrath was always justified. Anger, that occasional luxury of more balanced people, could keep us on an emotional jag indefinitely. What it was doing to me is that I would leave the place where I was at, wherever it was at, up on the freeway or out somewhere, and I'd go back to the shop maybe or something like that. When I got to the shop, I was remembering all this stuff and I was being controlled by it. But I didn't know that as I went from where I left the shop and got home, I still took it home. But when I was taking it home, I was driving my truck the same way I always drive. I had everything all pumped up in me, and I was already charged up with all these thoughts and this day, that what happened, whatever the day I was in. And so the promptly admitted it is that I never could understand, or I couldn't become aware of what it means when I recognize trouble, or I see trouble, or trouble's happening. And trouble means any kind of, anything at all that bothers me, anything that disturbs me. Now, how many days, I don't know about yourself, but look, for myself, I'm liable to go many days in a row and never get mad, never get angry, never get on. But when it does come, it seems to come in bunches, or it seems to come and stay. It seems like, man, I was high all them days, now I'm low now. And this goes for some time, too. But I don't know what the heck, what's needed to be done. Step 10 is where this here, now, if I will promptly admit something, and this means exactly what it says. For me, it's probably admitted to God. I associate the relationship that I'm building to God to help me wherever I'm at. So I got an ongoing living God with me in a conversation, but I'm going to use it for that purpose. So that when this here trouble comes, or this adversity, or this slow up, or whatever it is that I'm not going to live it. I'm not going to keep going with it. Now, it's the same thing in my home. My young daughter, Candy, when she was only, what, she would be maybe 12, 13, and she would be doing things, and I would look at these things like they bother me. They shouldn't be like this. I want them changed, and so I don't know how to handle it. I know Veronica's got the same problem, and so I've got to put everything together. I got to figure this thing out. And the way I figure it out, most generally anyway, is when I do this, is that I'm working on something, but it's in me. See, this is all inside of me. I don't have any patience. I don't have any compassion, any understanding. The kind of understanding that comes from compassion, to be able to think that whatever she's doing, it's not so bad after all. You know, what the heck, I did things myself one time. So I don't let these things grab a hold of me to where they disturb me, they bother me. When disturb means exactly that, they upset me. The spiritual axiom says that anytime I'm without God, anytime that I'm walking alone, is that I get in trouble. I see a lot of things that are really going to upset me. They're really going to bother me. And step 10 is where I can start now to, it's not like balancing a scale out or anything like that, but what it is about is that I can see in the day I'm in that whether I do it or can't accept it or whatever it is, there is a way to do this. There's a way now so that this inventory is my inventory. Now my inventory is so important so that I don't get caught up into somebody else's performance or whatever is happening. So that there is where the trouble lies, because I see it as trouble, or it's It's like my daughter used to do. She used to eat in her bedroom all the time, you know. And you could, you know, she just, you ought to see it, you know. And I used to tell everybody, you know, in my daughter's bedroom, you can eat off the floor. Because you know why? There's a piece of pizza there, there's an apple over there, there's some cereal over there, you know. And you open the drawers up, you know, and all the flies fly out and everything else like that, you know. See, the things that I see that disturb me, see, there is a way for me with step 10 where I can live in this world and promptly admit it means that I can get out of me and get away from my type of thinking and whatever is driving me and forcing me or making me get upset where doomsday's coming or they shouldn't do it and look what's happening now. To promptly admit it means I've got a relationship with God. This is what it means to me, is that I can relate my life to God in the day I'm in. So that if trouble does come, say there's something happening, and it's happened 10 times or it's just happened once, I don't know. It doesn't make any difference. There is a way that I can live with what's going on. Now, whether I adjust my thinking to it, so I accept it, and it's ended right then, or whether I have to just pray to God and then just walk until it's gone because of the fact that I'm not entertaining it and not running it through my computer, it doesn't make any difference. It's still that I offered it to God, and I properly did that, and then I go the rest of the day, whatever is left in the rest of the day, so that whatever it was didn't make this day into a rat race again. Now, that's important for me to know this part of the step 10, is that I can see troubles, and I can be around troubles that I know are troubles, and still not have to get so concerned or so wrapped up that this troubles now captures me, destroys my life, or makes me do things that I don't want to do, and later on I could kick myself in the hind end for doing them. Step 10 is continue to take personal inventory. Personal inventory is all about me. It's all about, no matter what I see out there, it doesn't make any difference. It's still in here. It's me. The spiritual axiom part of it was to identify that this here is all about me. I'm the one now that's upset. I'm the one that's in me. And I have to do something about it now. What do I do? And so to promptly admit it, I found out for me is exactly that. I can associate this to God again. And this again now, every time I've called on God, God is always there for me. It always, never fails. I have never missed it yet. I've never once ever went to God. And I found this out a long time ago. I started to do this and I found it out in prayer. I found out that there's two parts of prayer. First, the prayer is where the petition or the communion is made with God. And then the second part of prayer is where I walk and talk that day according to that prayer that I prayed to God to. So that prayer gets answered. Now this here sometimes was hard for me in the beginning, but it was a trial and error thing. And the only reason it was like that is because it was something to do I didn't know how to do. I didn't know when the results were there and when they weren't there. I didn't know how to look at things, but I kept trying and I kept going the same way all the time. Same way as in step 10. I found out that if I continually take personal inventory in each and every day, and I promptly admit each and every day that there is something in this day that's bothering me, upsetting me, I don't like it, no matter what it is, that this here means now that I'm depending on this God again. I'm learning how to put more dependency in my life to this God by having a method to do it in. So it isn't left up to me to figure out when I'm in trouble, I better turn it over or go to God or pray to God or whatever it is you say. Is that I can do it today because it's the method that I'm using today. Promptly admit it to God. Promptly do it. Promptly. See, and this gives me a direction. It tells me, that's a principle, by the way, too, that I don't have to live, I don't have to do, and I don't have to suffer because something went wrong, something is out there that I don't, it's attacking me some way or another. It's affecting me. And so if I do this, then I don't have to have the length of time in the day I'm in where I'm still upset. I'm still going from here to there, all shook up. Remembering things so that the resentments, the guilts, and all the troubles and all the thought process, it's not there. It's just not there. That's maybe along the line we were talking there, Kobe, and that what you were saying, see, is that this here is a working process. It's already explained. It's directed to me that if I will do this, this is what will happen. So what I was saying before is that I had to learn how to talk to God. In the day I'm in. Well, I learned that earlier than that. When step 10 is in there, step 10 is where noticeable things now. Noticeable things mean exactly what it says. Is that in the day that I'm in, if something bothers me, if I say something or do something or think something, whether it's new or old, doesn't make any difference. There is something there now, so I'm not stranded. I'm not left out to try to figure out where do I go from here. It already says where to go from here. It's like, if I continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, if I promptly admit it to God, that's a principle that it says to me that if I'll go to God with anything and everything in a day I'm in, new or old, that this here now will be in His care. It's the same thing that I was trying to build from step 3, when the basis of this here program is always on making a decision to turn my will and life over to care of God as I understood Him. That's only the basis. That's His foundation. That's the start. And 10 says up there that this here, if I'll continually turn over to God or go to God or include God in my life, that this here is what I have to do, is what's needed to be done, so that all of these here thought process, all these here resentments and memory of yesterday and of all the past and everything else, it's not there. It just isn't there. I don't need to call upon it. I don't have to even energize it. I don't have to put it in my life. It's not. I don't have to. It's not needed. Because promptly admitted, it means exactly that. I go to God promptly to have something done, instead of waiting till nighttime or the next time I talk to God or whenever I think it's necessary. See, I can do it exactly when it happens. I can be right there with it and be totally free of it. This is learning how to have a relationship with God. And I believe that step 10 was put there in the number form of 10 because of what 11 is. Because 10 would be more like a needed thing, an introduction thing or a description thing, so that when 11 comes in the picture as an application, it's coming from, and how, who am I going to admit it to, see? And this to me is where I, promptly, and how, who am I going to admit it to, see? And this to me is where I found out that it has to be done now, not tonight. Because from now till tonight, I can suffer, I can go, and I can be so wrapped up in my own personal problems, I can be so discouraged or so hurt, that by the time tonight comes, I'm a mess. I'm a sick mother. And this I don't want to be. I just don't want to be it. 10 is, I believe, all I've talked about really for a long, long time is the spiritual axiom. And the spiritual axiom is something that I have to look at, really keep alive. Because, you know, I don't know about you, but if you keep looking at something and you keep seeing something and it keeps bothering you, you better find out right away what it is, because this thing will engulf you, and it'll ruin the rest of your day, and it might even ruin the rest of your life or your rest of your relationship with anybody. It doesn't make no difference. Because when I come home, that was the deal with Steve, my sponsor, when he used to go around shaking his head. You know, I was so wrapped up in the disease of alcoholism, and I didn't know where to go with it, what to do with it. And then when I started in the morning, to get up early in the morning, and by the time I got home that night, I was so loaded with the spiritual axiom of all the things that was in that day that I was carrying home. And when I walked in that door, I wasn't just coming in the door with just a little bit. I was coming in the door with a head full of everything, you know. And I had no defense. I had no idea of what was wrong with me, because I was looking for trouble, man, because I had trouble in my head. This is all about that for me, it was. Port 10, we got to go, we're going to go, port 10. Step 11 is a step I guess you could talk more on, because we've got a little bit of time to go on it. It's sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understood Him. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. And that has a lot of words in it, but they're needed and they're necessary. And what they say is sought through prayer and meditation. This is along with that what we were talking about before, Kobe, is that sought is a word I don't use sought in my vocabulary. I don't remember ever saying that word as I speak or in the past or anything else. I know the word seek and seeking and but I don't remember using the word sought. So somebody asked me, Frank asked me one time, to explain to him what it means when it says sought. Because he wanted to know all about that word sought. And so sought is for an application, is instead of seeking something, It's like down in three when they put. I made a decision to turn my will and life over to care of God as I understood Him, but the God as I understood Him is underlined. And in 11, it also says the same thing, and it's underlined the same way too. God as I understood Him, and it's underlined. And sought is something that, it's a single thing, it's a one thing, it's a thing that I'm doing all the time. And sought is actually a way of life. Sought is. It's something that is each day comes and goes. Instead of seeking something, because it's like it's lost or to find something or something like that. But sought is an identification of what the Word says when it says what it does. Because it says sought through prayer and meditation. So it's telling me that I have to do something by prayer and meditation. Now, prayer, like I said before, now prayer I had to learn is two parts to prayer. Prayer is always an outwardly thing. And meditation is an inwardly thing. See, this is for me now. And so, whenever I pray, I can always pray to God, and I can say things to God, or I can put a request in, or anything like that. Then I can just walk away and hope that God will do it for me, or hope that it'll happen, or something like that. But it doesn't mean that. See, the second part of prayer meant that I'm going to perform in the day I'm in, so the prayer will be answered. So that I know God is there and He's going to help me, guide me, direct me, and He's going to take care of me, but He's not going to do it for me. Because this God isn't a tangible God, it's not somebody like another person sitting in me where I'm going to wait for Him to do it, something like that. So this means that the dependency that I must have is going to be the dependency that I'm going to trust in this God to supply whatever is necessary, and I will do whatever He wants me to do. So I have a performance to give in the day I'm in. I don't care what it is either, as far as the prayer goes. Because prayer is always going out of self and trying to get away from self and have a hookup with a power that's greater than me, a God, a substance, whatever you want to call it, so that this here line of reasoning or this need will be in the correct form, so that it isn't selfish, it doesn't come from me, it isn't something that I want personally, like a new car and get a Cadillac or something like that. The Sermon on the Mount taught me to pray, when I pray to God, to be definite. So that if I lack anything in my life, I should name it. Like if it's transportation, or if it's friendship, if it's job, if it's a home, if it's anything at all. To be specific in what I lack. It doesn't say that I should name, I want $1 million, I want a new Cadillac or something like that. But whatever is lacking in my life can be supplied. Because if the direction is given to me to be able to walk that way, to have eyesight and ears and the performance that day, that prayer will be answered. And I'll prove this in many, many ways, that this is exactly the way it works for me all the time. And so the performance that I give in the day I'm in is not a performance that I'm going to give personally because I think it should be this way or that way or anything like that. He's going to give me the patience and the tolerance, and He's going to give me the opportunity to have clean brain with clean eyesight and clean ears, so that what I'm looking at now is things I should look at to see the things or have the things that are necessary in my life. And this covers a lot of ground, but it's true. And so prayer had to be explained to me and taught to me how to pray to God. Actually, how to pray to Him. Because I'm so used to just wanting things, give me things like Santa Claus does and everything else like that. You know, just fix me and then give me things and all that. So there's a performance that I must give. There's a performance that I actually give. And this performance that I give is going to be backed up by His power. His power meaning that I don't have to worry, I don't have to think ahead, I don't have to get into a place where I have to hurt people or demand a performance out of them instead of out of me and so on. Prayer is an actual hookup to a living God that I can bank on, that I can truly, honestly use. I can go to God and ask for just thoughts, just strength to be able to do His will without even knowing what His will is. And the minute I do that, though, I'm not in the picture with my mind and with what I believe I should have and the way it should be and when it should be and all this. And so my life does change. It does slow down. And it does go to the direction it should go in instead of the direction I want it to go in. Step 11, when it says sought through prayer and meditation, and I believe that the meditation part of it, see, I don't agree with a lot of Alkies, and it isn't because I think they're doing wrong or anything else like that. I think that I need something that I need, because what they're doing is fine for them, but it's not fine for me. So I'm not quarreling with nobody at all. And I found out that meditation is actually shutdown time, quiet time. It's time when my brain has to quit its demands, quit its thinking in a power form. And meditation to me could be right here, to now, this time, right now. Could be in any day, at any time of the day or night, that whenever I need or think I need or want a life with God, or I want to have something in that day because I'm so full of energy, I'm so full of mind processing, worries, anger, or anything else, just the same thing like I used to in the truck, when I used to be out in the truck. I would be so wrapped up with what was going on that traffic is going 90 miles an hour and I'm out on a freeway. Maybe I'm over there in the center lane over there too, see, you know. And so here I am, I'm trying to do a job, but I'm also worrying about what the heck's going to happen, these cars and trucks and everything else like that. And I get frustrated and I can't even do nothing really to any good purpose. I can't even look at the engine even or see whatever it is wrong. So what I do, I found out that meditation, I can go back to the truck that I drove up there and I can sit there maybe 5 minutes, 3 minutes, and I can shut down. I can quit the thinking. I quit the processing of the traffic and of the worries and everything else like that. And it might take a short time. But what happens in that short time is that by quieting down, and the meditation means that I'm not energizing, I'm not using my brains in an order form or a power form, is that all of a sudden I go back to the truck, and you know, sometimes I'd fix that truck and he drove away without me towing him away or anything else like that. And I drove away and I had everything was fine, cool. And this here was meditation, was exactly meditation for my life, was to shut the brain down. And it didn't have to be 20 minutes or half an hour in the morning. It didn't have to be, I start with that. I could go all day long and do it 10 times in a day, one time, three times. It didn't make no difference. But I could use meditation for my life. Because in step 11, when it says, thought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, and here I am, wide awake, working on a freeway. My conscious contact with God was going on, but I didn't know it in reference to the step. See, the principles in the step were telling me, I could do this on a freeway. Why not do it there? Why do you have to wait till the morning? Why do you have to only do it one time in the daytime, in the morning, or something like that? See, I was limited and I was captured because somebody said, here's the way you do it. No, it ain't the way you do it. Maybe I could do it a little different. I'm not quarreling with your way. I'm not saying you're wrong. But I'm saying I got something now that helps me so that I can live in the day I'm in from a step application, which is what it was put there for. It wasn't put there to say that I have to do this at maybe 8 o'clock or 9, whatever time I get up in the morning. Why can't I benefit from this way of life again? Why can't I use what it says in these steps so that my life is fuller, so that it's greater in the relationship with God to have a life that's needed? Man, I need this. So, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact. My conscious contact was exactly what I was saying. As I live my life in the day I'm in, the conscious contact is going on in relationship to God for my life through prayer and meditation. Prayer is any kind of communion with God. And this year I learned the Sermon on the Mount, whether it's vocal, mental, whether it's spiritual, whatever it is, so long as the what's going on is in direct relationship to God for my life. It doesn't make no difference. In other words, I can have it all. I can mentally think with God. I can orally talk with God. I can pray with God. I can just do anything at all. Because I'm building a relationship, a conscious contact with Him. I'm practicing His presence. I'm doing His will, His works, because He's there. He's not in the bedroom at 8 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And then I have to wonder where he went after I left the bedroom. I have to get to work and I think, man, God left him home. I didn't even take him to work with me. Sure, this is true. Because I get rattled. I get caught up in living. I get excited. I do my own thing. And this here says that I don't have to do my own thing. You see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, a long time ago, they were always telling me, here's what you do. You get here and then from here, you just have to watch this. You have to stay with this. No way. I have to start down in step one. In step one, I acquire principles to help and to change this character. All through these steps now, up to 11. 11 is the only step where I can go spiritually in growth, in progression, in daily living life, so that I don't have to look at, I don't have to be, I don't have to remember, And I don't have to go backwards or forwards or anything else like that in spiritual life. Spiritual life is in the day I'm in. Spiritual life is directly in step 11. Step 11 only. I don't know any other step that will do for you as an alcoholic with alcoholism like step 11 will do. Because what it says in 11, it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understood Him. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's understood from down in two who the power of me and who the power of God is. For sanity, soundness of mind, wholeness of mind. And three says that I'm going to define this and turn my will and life over to care to that God as I understood Him. And 11 says the same thing, except it says I'm going to go farther. I'm going to improve my conscious contact with God as I understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. His will for me. And remember down in three, when it talks in there about the use of my will and God's will, is the correct use, is a my will alignment with God. So there's no question of, from three, there's no question of, I wonder if this is God's will or if this is my will. There's no such thing as that. Because the power says in two that I'm going to turn my will and my life from this decision to the understanding and to of what that is. And so here I am in 11 now, and it's saying the same thing over again now, but I'm going to improve my conscious contact with God, praying only for the knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. That meaning what it just said. Step 11 is where I can go anywhere on this earth in any day, and I call upon the power of God, and the power of God is there. I relate my life to God. I talk to God, and I improve each day the conscious contact. The reason I do that is because it's for me to do in the day I'm in, because each day is another day I have to go farther than I went yesterday. Whatever I did yesterday was only because it was yesterday. This day today, whatever is needed, is that power of God has to be there for this day. All these yesterdays, I can't use one of them in today's life for a benefit. They're nice to have, they're nice to remember, they're nice to look at, and they were there exactly. God rewarded me, and every day I went with Him. Today is another day that I must go farther. And 11 is the only step that I know of in the 12 steps that allows me to have this and do this, only because of what it says and what it's for. And that's why it's there in the 11th step, because when I get to the 12th step, the 12th step says in there, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, meaning the other 11, that I try to carry this message to alcoholics. I try to carry this message. See, and they're talking now about a message that's already there. It's been delivered. I've had the spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening is exactly what it says it is. It's somehow or another, something happened to me, and I was presented with something, and my mind opened up to it, my world opened up to it, and this is now what it means there. And when it says in step 2 to 3, is I understood it. Understood, not understand. It's understood exactly what the power can do, so long as the power greater than me, which is God. Step 11 tells me there that I can go farther in my life each and every day if I will improve my conscious contact with God by seeking, sought it. Sought it means that I'm doing it all the time. It's a steady progression. And so here I am in Alcoholics Anonymous now, and I got a hold of the world, I've got the power, I got the direction, I got the way of life that is there proven for me to do in each and every day. And it's an application form. It's no longer a reading form, it's no longer on the wall or any other place. It's in my life because that is my life. This here means now again the same thing again. Having had all of this that was presented to me, every bit of this here, I've got it. It's already happened. It's in me. I have to live it. When I live it, it's there. It's what I learned about principles, about truths. So long as I do them, they're mine. They belong to me. The character that I am, I built a character according to God's will, according to the program of recovery. This takes the monkey off my back. It gives me a way of going the day I'm in. I'm not running scared today. I'm not doing things today and paying a price for it. I just won't do it. If and when anything comes down the line that there's a question mark there that's needed, I know for sure that all I have to do is just go to God with this here, whatever it is, and in turn, whatever it is will not hurt me or harm me. I know that. This is a guarantee again. So Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all of my affairs. Principles are truths in all of my affairs. And that has been well explained. I believe that step 12 is a summation of the 11 steps because of what it says. It's referring to the other 11 steps. It's not referring to the step itself, the 12th step. The only part about the 12th step is the spiritual awakening of actually recognizing and identifying and actually looking and praising God or thanking God or acknowledging God for the life I have each and every day, all day. You know, I was on a I don't ever talk about this, but maybe I'll say something about it. And I was on a search for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and Ron probably knows about it too. And so what it was is that as I was living my life in AA, and I had a good life, and I got it, and I always have had, really. But there was always something wrong inside of me that kept driving me and kept pushing me, and I kept searching, and I kept searching, and I kept searching. And I didn't know what it was. And I started to go to churches, and I picked on one church first because I thought that these people had something there because I heard a great deal about them and everything else. And these were the Church of God, and the Church of God are Pentecostals. I was willing to do anything just to find whatever it was. I was going all over, not only in California, I was going in Colorado and Wyoming too, and I was really looking and looking and looking. And there was something missing in my life, and I didn't know what it was. And so I started going there, and these are holy rollers, and I was willing to roll on the ground with them if I could only find what it is I need to find, you know, because they seem to find it, you know, they go to the altar and have an altar calling, you know, and man, they're new people, man, they're happy people, joyous people, and everything else like that. And so I stopped going there, and I didn't like certain things they did, so I started looking elsewhere, you know. And so I went for 7 years, and I went to the Nazarenes, you know. And I mean, I lived there, man, at the Nazarene church, you know. And my kids, too, I had them baptized there, and I was there every Sunday, and I was there all week long and everything else, and AA and everything else, you know. And one day the baby of mine, his father, took me to a Christian Businessmen's Association. And this was in Denver, Colorado. And so I went there for lunch and with him. And I liked what I heard, and I liked what I seen and what they said. And I knew they had something, but I didn't know what it was either. I went to another one, too, after that. And then I left Colorado. I went to come here to Irvine. I bought a home down in Irvine, and I was living down in Irvine. And that's where the headquarters of the Christian Businessmen's Association is down there. So one day I was going by there, and I thought, you know, I want to go in there and see these people, just see what's in this building. Brand big, nice building. I went in there and talked to the gal at the desk. I said, I don't know what I'm doing in here. I said, but I'd like to talk to somebody about something. You know, it was the dumbest thing, you know, and because I just drove there like, you know, like that. So I went in there. And this guy, young guy, come out, you know, and I told him about a little bit about me and that. And so we went in the other room there, you know, and you know what he did? He baptized me. And then he said some things to me. And what he said to me was that it made sense to me. And what it was accepting Jesus Christ. And I don't, you know, I don't know much about nothing, see, because I didn't have anything other than AA, you know, in all these years, and I've been talking to God, man, and believe me, I've been on my knees and for days and days in a relationship with God and everything. So anyway, he did what he did, and I did what I did as far as that goes, you know, and whatever it was that I needed was supplied right then and there, and I never had that search, I never had that feeling, and I walked free ever since that time. That ain't no recommendation or nothing, But the reason I say that is because in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is a spiritual life, and I know that. It's not a religious life, according to the doctrines or the dogma or anything else like that. So, you see, something was needed for me in my life, and I went for so long and didn't know what it was. And then when it was necessary to be there, it was put there. And the way it was put there, it was certainly not out of my doing, because I didn't know what I was doing even, see. But it shows me that when the relationship with this God, that all of the things that are necessary in the day I'm in will be supplied if I will go to God for that reason. And that's what I did there, because I did come up to the wire where I had to have something that I was searching for and didn't know what it was. And it was no more than what everybody talks about. but it's something that I had to go through, only me personally, but it's something that I don't use an AA to talk about, because I don't want no alcoholic to think that I'm laying something on him, and I don't want him to think that I'm talking from I'm talking only from the Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step recovery program. I'm carrying this message, but the other is real important only to me. And what I said there is something that was needed for my life, because it gave me more of a life. And when that happened, and that happened in 1980, the first of 80. So you see, that's only a short time ago. And it was needed a short time ago, too, because 13 years ago isn't very long. Not according to where I've been anyway, you know. So it's to show you, though, the importance of this life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and what it can do for each one of us when we need to go, and we will go where we need to go. It's already there for you, each and every one of us. Because we can talk these steps to death, you know. We can just go forever in steps. And we can talk and talk and talk. But the actual life that I need comes the same way every day. The daily reprieve, meaning exactly that I must seek and do God's will. And this is what I'm doing all the time anyway. Because I found out that's all I need to do. From that, everything else is supplied. Because we all, every one of us, had the same thing, the same set of steps. And these steps are in a living form, an application form. So, maybe, what time have we got now? We'll wind this up right now. We'll go to maybe some questions before we got about maybe 10 minutes or so, or 15 minutes. Huh? Have we got the time for that? Yeah.
Bob, how do you explain meditation?
Meditation?
In your view?
Yeah, meditation. Well, you know, it's easy. The easiest way that it's said in Alcoholics Anonymous, most of them say, is you shut down it's a listening time instead of a talking time. That's essentially true. But what it is, though, is that if I can empty myself means the mind is not in an energy force or a power form or a thinking process. And sometimes this is very, very difficult for me to do. I never can get up in the morning and sit for a half an hour and wait or talk to myself or wait till I quit talking to myself for a half an hour. Man, I can't be in a room a half an hour with me only. I just go nuts. I just talk to myself and everything else. This is the truth. I mean this. But there is a way for me to do it. And the shutdown only means that all of the thought processes that I need, that I do, whether they're bills, whether they're tomorrow's or yesterday's or anything that's going on in my life, you know, I have some health problems, you know, and so these health problems, if I give it energy, if I let it come into my mind and I use that, there's no way I can meditate at all, because I'm wrapped up with something that's really, really strong. It's something that controls me, and it's my life, really. And because if I give it energy or anything else, I go right away to the grave, you know. I go right away to doomsday's coming, see, and so forth. And so I can't entertain or allow energy in my brain so that I can shut down. I don't know how to shut down. The only way I can shut down is meditation, is I pray to God, I talk to God, I explain to God what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get closer to you, God. I'm trying to not think. Would you help me, see? And I'm always doing this regardless. I'm thanking my Lord right now. I thank him in Jesus Christ's name. I have to do this all the time because I don't know no other way to do it. I don't know how to meditate or prayer without going to God. I just don't know how to do it. But see, I had to learn this a long time ago. And I used to be not ashamed, but I didn't want you to know what I was doing. I wouldn't tell you what I was doing, see? Because this bothered me. It hurt me inside to think that I had to do it. But yet it's doing for me what I can't do for myself. And I don't know how many other guys are around. I don't want to let you know that that I need God like that even. Now that's a dumb thing, but it's true. I don't know can you tell another man your feelings about God and what you need? I couldn't do it. And I have a hard time today sometimes because I have trouble, see. And I think that I shouldn't do this, see, because maybe I'm questioning God. Maybe God don't want me to do that, see. But maybe he does too, though. So to shut this brain down, I can't turn, I don't have a key or a switch I flick, you know, myself, see. And I can't do it personally by myself, but I can do it with a relationship with God. I can do this. And it's something that each one of us, I know for sure, you have to do something, but you're going to have to do it. How you do it is no quarrel with no one else, nobody else. And so what you do, if you find something or that helps you, you'd be a fool not to keep it, not to go for more of it. And that's what I found for myself, because I used to be held back by self only, not by people, but it was because of people that held me back. It was what I thought. It's what I thought they thought of me. It's what I thought if I said something to them, they would think less of me. And see, I can't be totally free because I'm depending on me or them, when in turn all I have to do is totally depend on God. If I honestly, sincerely talk to God the way I'm talking right now, I know He'll give me everything I need. I know it. It's the same thing for you. If you want to have meditation, you just go ahead and relate your life to God. If you pray to God, if you talk to God, if you use God in your life for your life, why can't He do that? Man, if He can stop the most devastating handicap, it says there in 6 and 7, if He can take away the alcohol and alcoholism from you, why can't He do something else for you? He can. And it says He can. And so I have to know this by doing it, though. I have to do it. This is the same thing again. It's a participation game, man. You have to get in there and get going with it, see? Meditation is no more than emptying your brain of the power that's in there, which is you, and allowing that to be like that so that other things can be put there. This is no more than that. See, meditation is an inside job. Prayer is an outside. Inside, meditating is going inwardly with God.
It's not those times like Colby mentioned the word abstract. It's not when you're in that kind of an abstract where you're just, your mind's just void.
My mind is never a void, because I'll tell you what, down in 2 I learned what an open mind is. An open mind ain't a mind that's void. An open mind is a mind that isn't captured with self, with preconceived ideas, emotions, feelings, or anything else. It's a good mind. It's a healthy mind. It's a good, good mind. But self is out of there, and that's why it's like that. Then you can have now the relationship with God. And that's what they're talking about in step 2. To believe in something else other than self, man, you've got to get out of that mind. How could you possibly have anything else in there when you're in there? Man, you're fixed. That's what they're telling you, step 1 and 2.
John again, where it says here on 98, there is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer taken separately. These practices can bring much relief and benefit. Can you give me some practical examples of when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life?
That's very easy to see, is because remember in the steps, when I said the steps are in a logical order form to do what's necessary to do so the alcoholism will be treated. In there, right away in step 2, first in step 1, they identified the alcohol and they identified the hitting the bottom and the disease and then the unmanageable life, and then they go into 2 to come to believe in something other than self that can do something self can't do. And then 3 says what it says, that you're going to make, or I'm going to make a decision to do exactly that. I'm going to put my life and will in His care, as I understood Him from 2. Not from no other place, but 2. 2 says that there's a power that I can use that will restore me to sanity. 3 says, let's do that. Let's go that to that power, which is God, and we can do it. If they said God in 2, then I wouldn't have touched it. I was that way at that time. But they're smart. God says, I'm going to make these words right. And when He makes it right for all of us, any alcoholic. Not just you, but me also. And so this takes in you, takes in me. That what we're doing in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a recovery program. We're going to come away from some place by doing something different and having something different. It's going to be starting, and it actually starts in 1, of course. But the foundation of it is in 3, where I'm going to make a decision to do exactly what's needed to be done so I can have whatever it is I need for my life. And that's what it says in 2. I need sanity, soundness of mind. I need a power that I can depend on that can do more than I can do. 3 says, well, we're going to do that, but we're going to call Him God now. Maybe you can accept this word now where you couldn't accept it in 2. And that's true. I did accept it in 3 because I did know what 2 meant. And it says understood. It doesn't say understand. It says understood means that it's clear to me right now that I can't go any farther with me, but I can go farther with this power that's greater than me. And this is who they call God. So I can let him in my life now. The prayer and meditation part of it is left way up there in 11, because what's needed before prayer and meditation is to get rid of some of this 1-6, this alcoholism, this character that I am. Because why they leave, like in step 6, is defined, is that when I'm entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, it means exactly that. It's a lifetime practice. When I say that, that means that I can go now in step 7 and I can start serving God and man. That's what it says. I'm going to have to serve God and man now. Serve God and man is not taking, it's giving. Before this, I had no idea that there's anything in here that I possibly could do, but I can do this now. How come I can do this? I couldn't do it way down below when I first got here. How come in step 7 I can do things in 7 and I have great success? Success away from the rat race. Success with treating my alcoholism. Living in a world now. 7 says I can live in this world now. See, I can live in Alcoholics Anonymous world right now in step 7 because of step 7. How come? See? Because the new character now is doing something he should do. He's starting to go to people. He's starting to trust in God. He's starting to identify God through pain. He's starting to do many, many things that he couldn't do before. All we're ever talking about here is a relationship with a power, which is God. Whenever the power of God isn't there, the power of self's there. Whenever the power of self's there, the disease of alcoholism is there. It's understood. It's understood that I can't do anything else but I do. My own track record proves that, drunk or sober. You know, you're talking about the prayer and meditation. You know, that was one of the things that I kept pushing away all the time. I kept pushing away this progress in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what it was a relationship with God. I was afraid to talk. I was ashamed to talk about it. I didn't want nobody to know. I just don't know what I'm doing. You know, I try to make everything happen. Honest to God, the days came and went. And I fought everything. And I'm sober. And yet I won't surrender. I just won't accept it. I don't want to live like that. I don't want to live in ignorance. I don't want to live in harm, hurt. I just don't want to do none of that no more. And I don't have to do that, and I don't do that. Man, I can tell you stories that I don't know if you know what adversity means, but I'll tell you I know what adversity means. I know what it's like to be told you ain't going to live. I know what it's like to say goodbye to your kids. I know what it's like to say, man, you ain't going to make it. Say goodbye to your kids. Put all your possessions in somebody else's name so they'll give it to your kids so the state won't get it. That's what happened to me. How far do you have to go before you recognize what's needed in your life as an alcoholic with alcoholism when they present it to you the way they present it to you? Man, these are only suggestions. They don't say you got to do this. They say here's the way we do it. How far do you have to go really in pain, suffering, hurt, harm, loved ones, everything else besides your own life? Man, I've been given more than a daily reprieve. Only through the grace of God. The undeserved gift from God. Something I didn't qualify for. And he said, yeah, just stay with me, I'll take care of you. You do this and I'll do for you what you can't do for yourself. What more would you want? If you did wrong somebody, yes, you sure do. The most important thing is to promptly admit it so that you can get the power and you can get the direction and you can know what to do. Certainly, if you hurt somebody, why not correct it right now, as soon as you do it, immediately, if you can, if it's possible.
Wouldn't that be step 9 to correct it?
No, it could be. No, 10 is there because what 10 is, is 10 says in there that if there is something going on in the world you're in, whether it's new or old, doesn't make any difference. But if it's new, it's there. It must be looked at. It must be presented. It must be identified. See, because if I look to the defects of character that were there, only there from step four, I'll get away with something today and not even acknowledge it, recognize it, or identify it, or anything else. Because there is such a thing as new defects of character. Step six is there so that I'm entirely ready all the time, every day. It's the beginning of a lifetime practice. Step 10 is not there for that reason. Step 10 is we're there so that I can live in that world out there regardless of what happens out there. New or old, doesn't make any difference. And then I have a way of going. That's what the spiritual axiom is about. So that if I'm with spiritual life, it's not an axiom no more. Spiritual, it means exactly that. I'm without spirituality. I don't have anything in me other than me, and I'll get out there, and now I'm going to pick up on defects of character and start doing things again. Whether they're new or old, it doesn't make any difference.
I didn't follow that. I didn't understand that.
Well, an axiom is something that displays itself. It shows itself. It doesn't have to be. It identifies itself. Like if when I used to get angry, you didn't have to ask me if I was angry. You look at me and you could tell I was angry. See? And a spiritual, anything that's lacking, the spiritual axiom would be the opposite. Would be it lacks the spiritual life or the spiritual background or the spiritual power and everything else like that. So anytime anything disturbs me, there's something wrong with me spiritually. See? And the axiom, of course, is very well, it explains itself. It displays itself. Of something. It should be one way, it's the other way. It's an axiom. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works.